Blog Talk Radio.
California, and this is Ray Starman, the host of the Ray Starman Show. We're on for an hour tonight, talking about a myriad of stuff. The main topic, the shining city upon a hill is in mortal danger. And the term city upon a hill, first used by John Winthrop, who was one of the first founders of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, beginning in the 1600s. And he said, "We will be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us. So that if we deal falsely with our God in this work, we have undertaken and so cause him to withdraw his present help from us. And we shall be made a story and a byword throughout the world." It was Ronald Reagan who made the term famous in his frequent referral to the United States of America as the shining city upon a hill. And during his farewell address to the nation on January 11th, 1989, Reagan described his vision of the shining city upon a hill. And let's listen to what he said.
And that's about all I have to say tonight, except for one thing. The past few days, when I've been at that window upstairs, I've thought a bit of the shining city upon a hill. The phrase comes from John Winthrop, who wrote it to describe the America he imagined. What he imagined was important because he was an early pilgrim, an early freedom man. He journeyed here on what today we'd call a little wooden boat. And like the other pilgrims, he was looking for a home that would be free. I've spoken of a shining city all my political life. But I don't know if I ever quite communicated what I saw when I said it. But in my mind, it was a tall, proud city, built on rocks stronger than oceans, windswept, God-blessed, and teeming with people of all kinds, living in harmony and peace. A city with pre-ports that hummed with commerce and creativity. And if there had to be city walls, the walls had doors, and the doors were open to anyone with the will and the heart to get there. That's how I saw it and see it still. And how stands the city on this winter night? More prosperous, more secure, and happier than it was 8 years ago. But more than that, after 200 years, two centuries, she still stands strong and true on the granite ridge, and her glow is held steady no matter what storm. And she's still a beacon, still a magnet for all who must have freedom. For all the pilgrims from all the lost places who are hurtling through the darkness toward him. We've done our part. And as I walk off into the city streets, a final...
And how stands the shining city upon a hill on this wintry night in 2016? Well, we'll talk about that. And I'll be right back on the Ray Starman Show. The Ray Starman Show is brought to you by GaryOwenVentures.com, a new hybrid consulting firm offering a unique combination of legal, transactional, and operational expertise to support technology businesses and private equity investors, providing practical, versatile, and relevant solutions to enable growth at reasonable prices, offering leadership perspective and vision that comes only from a diverse range of unique backgrounds and experiences. Check out GaryOwenVentures.com. That's GARRYOWENVentures.com. We're back on the Ray Starman Show, and heard Ronald Reagan talk about his vision of how he thought the city, the shining city upon the hill, looked like. And then he ended that final address to the nation by giving a quick summation of how the situation was when he left on January 11th, 1989. Well, things were pretty good. Pretty good. In fact, before Reagan left, he had asked General Colin Powell. He asked him, "General, what's going on in the world? What's the situation?" He said, "The world is quiet tonight, Mr. President." Well, the world is not quiet tonight, on January 29th, 2016. And the shining city upon a hill on this wintry night in 2016 has lost its luster. And I think most Americans realize this. That is why the two candidates on the outside, Bernie Sanders on the left and Donald Trump on the right, are doing so well. Because the nation, the voting public, they know that there are so many problems, and our government and people we have elected have not, will not, and for some reason cannot solve these problems. Therefore, these outsiders are now being looked upon as perhaps the only people that can solve the problems. People on the left think Bernie Sanders is the savior. People on the right think Donald Trump is the savior. The nation is literally in a free fall. And I believe we're in mortal danger on a lot of levels. We're being destroyed by internal and external forces, the forces of political correctness, out of control big government, cultural Marxism, outsourcing of jobs. Factories have been shipped out. America used to be literally the arsenal of democracy. There were factories everywhere. Okay? It used to be that you graduated from high school, you didn't want to go to college. Most people didn't go to college. You got a job in a factory. You worked your way up to you were the foreman. Maybe you were running the whole factory. Maybe you did well enough that you bought the factory, or you bought another factory, or you bought something else and went from there. That was your key to success in America. You could get a job in some kind of manufacturing, some kind of factory job, once you got out of high school, if you didn't want to go to college. Most people didn't. Most people still don't to this day, but a lot more do. You could work 50 years ago, 40 years ago even. You could get a job in a factory, get a house, have two cars, have savings, raise a family, take a couple of vacations a year. Can you do that now? You graduated from high school, where are you going? You going to work at McDonald's? You going to work at Walmart as a greeter? And even if you go to college, the job market is so bad. What can you get? We have people with PhDs that are working at Starbucks. There's reckless trade deals that have done everything for everyone else and nothing for the United States of America, like NAFTA. And then TARP that they're pushing through, doing nothing for the United States, everything for everybody else, nothing for this country. The economy, a nightmare. Our enemies on the foreign policy, national security level, our enemies are literally waiting for their moment to pounce on us. They're just waiting. They're like lions sitting out there in the tall grass in the Serengeti Plain in Africa. They're just waiting to pounce on us. We all know. Want to know what the current state of the U.S. military is? Just watch those videos of the U.S. Navy surrendering to the Iranians. The U.S. military is on life support. The military is a victim of budget cuts, readiness problems, endless social engineering. It's eating the armed forces alive. The arm, forces in the United States are literally being attacked by an aggressive form of cancer, literally by 10 stage 4 cancers. Our enemies know the U.S. military, it's a wounded animal. And like I said just now, what could be more evidence of the lousy state of the U.S. military than the Navy's disgraceful conduct in the Persian Gulf 2 weeks ago? The microcosm of the problems in the military right now. In the last 8 years, or evidence, the last 7 years, I should say, the Democrats are thoroughly incapable and incompetent of successfully running our national security and foreign policy. When was the last time the Democrats had a president? When was the last time that the United States had a president that was a Democrat who knew what the heck they were doing as far as national security? Bill Clinton? Not really. Jimmy Carter? Please. LBJ? You have to go back to JFK to find a Democrat who was a hawk on national security. The Obama administration, John Kerry, Rear Admiral Kirby, they're all following the same mantra, groveling and kowtowing to the enemy, the enemies of freedom. It's become their modus operandi. You know, you can do all the tap dancing and lying and scurrying around the subject you want. The fact is, we're weak. We're being laughed at by ISIS, by the Iranians, by the Russians, by the Chinese. We're probably being laughed at by the Girl Scouts of America right now. The Girl Scouts of America could beat us. We've got a federal government that is out of control, literally out of control. We have citizens harassed at airports and railway stations by the TSA. Now, granted, after 9/11, you obviously had to increase security, change procedures. The TSA operates on about half of 1% common sense every day. We've all heard the horror stories, harassing old people, pregnant women, little kids, on and on it goes. You know, the 90-year-old Caucasian lady goes through, is harassed and strip searched by the TSA. The two single male Arab-looking guys with no luggage are just waved right through. Oh, come on in. Welcome to America. What are you carrying there? Dirty bomb. Come on in. Come on in. Ma'am, you just hold it right there. How old are you? 95? Well, we're going to have to strip search you. Could be a terrorist. Oh, well, here comes another single Arab-looking man. Come on in. Come on in. Welcome to America, land of the free and home of no common sense. You know, we got our phone and social media conversations monitored by government intel around the clock. It's something Rand Paul's been pushed, you know, talks about. Nobody else does. Rand Paul's right about this. What price are we willing to pay for all this security? How bad is it going to get? Are we going to end up the kind of country that V was living in, V for Vendetta? That's a great movie, by the way. If anybody hasn't seen it, I'm sure a lot of people have seen V for Vendetta, about a police state in the UK. And there's so many parallels to what's happened in the United States. Of course, V for Vendetta is a police state. We're on our way to becoming one if we don't stop. Check out V for Vendetta. I love this, the scene where V interrupts the state-run TV and does this little speech. If anybody wants to check that, just Google V for Vendetta, his speech to London. It's just fabulous. And we've got Obamacare. Obama said, oh, your premiums won't increase. Yes, they're increasing. Obamacare premiums are out of control. Okay, you're going to wait one person, you're going to pay $500 a month first if you're single. Over 40 years, you're $500 a month to have a policy with a, you know, a $10,000 deductible or something. It's insane. Mike Huckabee was on Fox News yesterday talking about some guy who's paying $28,000 a year in Obamacare premiums. He makes $59,000. That's just insane. When we get back on the Ray Starman Show after this quick break, we'll talk more in depth about the U.S. economy. Be right back on the Ray Starman Show. We're back on the Ray Starman Show. We've got about 43 minutes left tonight, and we're going to continue talking about the myriad of problems engulfing the greatest nation on earth. And after that, we'll talk about the debate last night, the Iowa caucuses, who's looking good, who's not, who should just be leaving the race. Seems like a lot of those guys. And we'll talk about Hillary, some new revelations if you haven't heard, all tonight on the Ray Starman Show. And the U.S. economy is literally on the verge of total collapse. Now, people might be listening and saying, well, Ray, what are you talking about? The Dow rallied 376 points today. It's never looked better. The stock market is a chimera, meaning it is basically a representation of nothing. Stock market used to really be a mirror of the economy, but for the last decade, it's always been a casino. Okay, it's not really a casino. People say that. Let me explain. The markets are not a casino. Casino is filled with different games for gambling. Okay, the stock market, the securities market, the fixed income bond market, the commodities market. It's not gambling. Because you have to use fundamental analysis and technical analysis to make your decisions. Fundamental analysis is looking at various information, stocks, everything that you would analyze a company's portfolio, P/E ratio, commodities. What's the weather like now for this? For wheat? What are our imports in wheat? What are our exports? What are the different kinds of wheat? What does it look like for the next year? What does it look like for the next week? What does it look like today? That's fundamental analysis. Technical analysis, analysis of charts. So without going too much on a tangent here, stock market isn't really, or the markets aren't a casino, but they are being manipulated by larger players. And the commodity markets are also being manipulated. Because the commodity markets are now missing since the floors basically closed and everybody's on the computer, it eliminated what they used to call in Chicago the local. The individual member of the Board of Trade, the Merc, was trading for their own account. What did the local provide? Price discovery and liquidity. Okay? A lot of those people left when they couldn't make money off the floor. And you don't have that. You don't have as much liquidity. Some of the volume is down. Who's in control? Big companies in the commodity world. Cargill. Stuff like that. So it is being manipulated, but in a different sense. It's not a casino, though. You are doing fundamental analysis, technical analysis to make your decision. You're not just going in there saying, I'm putting $500 on 30 red on roulette. I guess people would say, okay, well, how about the people that go into casinos and count cards? I mean, maybe that's fundamental analysis. It's not the same. The average American, there's a lot of people who are out there working two jobs a day, three, is to stay above water, because we don't have a lot of these jobs that we used to. And why don't we? We're at the point, one of these points in history, you almost could compare it to beginning of the Industrial Revolution, where the world, the Western world, Europe and the United States, North America, switched from agrarian economies to industrial economies. We're switching from the old industrial economy to high-tech economies. The problem is, when you switch from the agrarian to the industrial economy, there were a lot of jobs created. There doesn't seem that there are that many jobs being created, because companies are outsourcing the jobs to other countries. The companies have left because of tax issues. And we have a large population now that is competing for an amount of jobs that is minimal. We also have a large number of women in the workforce. So you have women in the workforce, a larger population, not enough jobs. And that's why when the government says, oh, the unemployment rate was, you know, whatever it is, 6% or some ridiculous number that means nothing. The real unemployment rate in this country is 10, 15, 20%. I'd say it's around almost 20%. There's millions of people that have just given up looking for a job. You know, you have somebody that's 45 years old, can't get a job, has been out of work for 2 or 3 years. Maybe they have a nest egg that they're living in. Maybe they move back in with their parents, you know, living in the basement. They've got maybe a $200,000 nest egg that they're living off because they worked their whole life from when they graduated from college. Can't get a job, trying to figure out what they're going to do. Somebody said to me, hey, you know, I went on LinkedIn. There's so many weird job descriptions people have. They're not weird. It's people are trying to make some, trying to redefine themselves because they can't get a job. Then you have the millennials. They get done with college. They've got thousands of dollars in debt. Excuse me. They can't get a job. They've been working at Starbucks with their $50,000 degree because there's not enough jobs. It's a big problem. It's a disaster. The nation is one bad day away from the whole fragile economic house of cards coming down in a mammoth avalanche of disaster. The day is coming, folks. I mean, I am not an economic expert, but you listen to Gerald Celente. Listen to Harry Dent. Listen to Max Kaiser. Listen to Alex Jones talk about it. Stephen Quayle. George Norrie. The economy is coming down. Jimmy Rogers. The late Wayne Rogers. Don't listen to CNBC. The stock market could be down, back down to 200, and CNBC would say, hey, we've never had a better buying opportunity. Every time the market has a horrible day, CNBC thinks it's a great buying opportunity. You know, CNBC runs on one thing only. Keep buying, keep buying. Don't scare anybody because the viewers have to come back. The last time I was months ago when there was a pretty big meltdown for a few days. Market was down, I don't know, maybe 1,000 points in a matter of a few days. CNBC actually said they were blaming the market going crashing hundreds of points on odd lot orders. An odd lot order in the stock market is an order for stocks to sell or buy under 100 shares, which is nothing. Sell 32 shares of Walgreens at the market. Okay? How is that? How's some old lady dumping 74 shares of Walgreens? How is that going to cause the market to tank 500 points? No, it was some hedge fund dumping 500,000 shares of Walgreens or whatever. It's just, you know, total nonsense. It is a house of cards that is one mistake, bad day away from coming down. Please, if you have money, do something to protect it. William Devane isn't on those commercials for his health. Well, he probably is. But listen, buy gold, buy silver. Put your money in other places other than the stock market. Now, how about the schools in America? What a disaster the U.S. education system has become. You know, these schools are run by these corrupt socialist do-gooder idiots. You know, these people that run these schools are just absolute fools. They really are. And I worked as a teacher full time for several years. And most of the people that are involved in that industry are just natural do-gooder bureaucratic types. And we'll be right back to start the show. The Ray Starman Show is brought to you by Steve Barton's News Alert, covering Chicago corruption, the Obama Democrat machine, gun control monopolists, the Ron Paul revolution, higher education ripoffs, and the housing crash. Check out Steve Barton's News Alert. That's nalert.blogspot.com. You won't be disappointed. We're back on the Ray Starman Show. We had a minor technical problem there, almost a power outage. On the computer, that is, not here in the studio. And I think I can't get enough of Ennio Morricone's theme this week, To the Good, Bad, and the Ugly. I think it's a phenomenal creation. And I've always been amazed by the people that can do that. They can just sit down and create music like that. Just by looking at pictures and watching the completed film. I think it's a fascinating talent that I certainly don't have. Most of us don't have. Let's continue talking before the power almost melted down here on the computer. And thank you, Microsoft. Talking about the schools in America. The education industry is it really attracts a certain type of person. There's a lot of women in it. I think that it's the men that are interesting that are still attracted to it because it's been very feminized. Most of the teachers now, K through 12, are women. Like in the old days where you had a lot of men in middle school and high school. And there seems to be, it's just basically just crucified by political correctness. You have these stories of teachers calling the police because they can't control a 7-year-old. A 5-year-old makes a gun symbol and they're calling the sheriff. So you have the teachers that are idiots. They can't even control a 5-year-old. And then these bozo cops show up and, treat this guy like, treat a little 5-year-old like he's El Chapo, cuffing him, stuffing him. I mean, it's insane. It's what I'm going to get back to. Where is the common sense in this country? Where the heck is our common sense? We used to be known as the nation on earth that had common sense. We've just turned into a nation of these just paralyzed, politically correct idiots that can't make a good decision if our life depended on it. We can't make a decision to pee if our pants were on fire. We're so paralyzed. But yet, these idiot school administrators do stuff like this, but then they allow the classrooms in like a high school, middle school. They're a circus. They're like the Attica State Prison riot. A lot of these classrooms. One of the reasons I didn't last in the education world was I was too tough. And I was told that. I was old school. Went to a Jesuit high school, Loyola Academy in Chicago. Those are the old days where you'd get the crap beaten out of you if you screwed around, which is probably what a lot of kids need nowadays. You know, I know teacher wants to, do anything to a kid, but I mean, the implicit fear that the teacher's coming down the aisle, you better behave, seem to do a lot for keeping kids under control. Because the current system ain't working, folks. It's a disaster. So I don't know how any man could want to be in the education world. Woman, yes. It's a woman's world now in the education world. And, you know, there's just an incredible amount of frustration in America. I mean, look at the people on the left. Now, granted, if you're on the left, who do you have to choose from now? Okay, you've got Hillary. Watch out who I'll talk about. I love talking about Hillary. She's a fascinating study into narcissism, delusion, and high crimes. But what does Hillary have? Let's say Hillary wasn't a criminal, which I know she is. But anyway, if she wasn't, what's the attraction to her? Well, maybe if you're just an old school Democrat, she's a Democrat. You got to vote for a Democrat. Okay, I get it. But what's her campaign model? Vote for me because I deserve it? I mean, she sits around like some 17th century princess waiting to be crowned the queen of the country because she deserves it. She's hung in there long enough. Well, she did put up with Bill. And then you've got Sanders. I was thinking a couple days ago, Sanders, let me remind you, he's the angry guy at the deli counter who's screaming at the person working the cash register because he didn't get enough mustard on his corned beef sandwich. Sanders really can get upset. He gets red and white hair. He's a genuine human being. He really believes what he believes, and God bless him for that. But he is a genuine socialist, probably a borderline communist. And a lot of these young people who love him, who have, you know, are feeling the burn, they love him because he's promising all this free stuff. Hey, you're upset because you're in college and you have to all this debt. Don't worry, the government will take care of it. The government will pay for it. Upset about this? Don't worry, the government will take care of it. The government will pay for it. The government is the solution for everything. Guess what, Bernie? Your economic problems will double our debt, collapse the economy. There's never been a time in history when high taxes, government meddling, and Big Brother social programs would do anything for a country. And people say, well, what about FDR? Well, the economy was pretty bad shape. The only thing that really got us moving again was World War II. Okay. Now, granted, FDR got in, the situation was pretty bad. But still, a lot of his stuff was out of control. And the economy would have been still pretty bad if it hadn't been for Tojo and Aldoff. The government is never the solution to the problem. The government is the problem. What did Reagan say? It's one of his greatest quotes. I've got to find that quote on YouTube. So the 10 worst words in the English language are, I am from the government and I'm here to help. And that is the schism in America right now. You have one side, the left. You have this guy who is just a radical socialist, wants the government to do everything. Then you have a super capitalist Trump. While Trump, people say, isn't it really a true, pure Republican conservative? He is in a lot of ways. He believes that the government is not the solution to anything. And certainly Ted Cruz does. Cruz is probably the most libertarian out of all of them. We'll talk about that in a moment when we come back. You know, and America is on the precipice. If we elect Hillary, if she skates by her most recent problems tonight, or God forbid, comrades, Dr. Zhivago Sanders, It would really be the death knell for America. I mean, we've been putting up with 7 years now of Obama. It's chronic mismanagement of everything from national security to our national infrastructure. On the other hand, the election of a President Trump or Cruz would give the nation a chance to rise from the ashes and become what John Winthrop saw back in the 1600s and Ronald Reagan envisioned, the shining city upon a hill. And we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back to talk about election 2016. Show. We got about 20 minutes left tonight. Talk about right now about the debate last night. And I actually was watching the coverage of the debate itself on Fox, but I was switching over to CNN, even over to MSNBC. The coverage on MSNBC seemed pretty bad. Chris Matthews, I don't know, he was asleep at the wheel. Sometimes I like to get his perspective. I like to hear all of them. Get out of the bubble a little bit on Fox. Every once in a while, venture forth into enemy territory. And the debate, it just seemed like without Trump, it looked like a group of family members of seven or eight brothers who were loitering around the house waiting for their dad to show up. Now, where's dad? Is he going to show up or not? Well, who's in charge of it? Well, it looks like Ted. He's the older brother. He's in charge. You know, it was like My Three Sons without Fred McMurray. You know, Uncle Charlie's gone. It looks like Robbie, Chip, and Ernie are home. Showing my age a little bit by talking about My Three Sons. But it really was that. Let's talk about Cruz. Cruz did okay, but I think he could have done better. I think he could have been done better last night. He was sort of picked apart. Rubio really looked, I think, is a clear winner of that debate. The thing is that Rubio sometimes to me comes across, he looks like a 17-year-old kid that should be running for the student body president, but he's now running for president of the United States. And his Senate voting record is sort of like my class attendance record at Southern Methodist, which was probably about 5%. Actually, had one class at SMU. Russian history. I had been there in so long that I couldn't remember the classroom. And I remember opening the doors 110, 112, Russian history, 114. No. It took me about six classrooms, so I finally found it. And the professor looked at me like, who is this guy? Let's just say I didn't do too well that semester with that guy. And somehow I had dreams about that, too, where I'm opening doors trying to find my classroom. Yeah, it's just Rubio. I think he's on the move. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in Iowa. We'll talk about that in a second. But he's on the move. I don't know. I don't really think he's going to pull anything spectacular off in 2016. But he's a guy to look at maybe about 4 years from now. Let's take a look at some other people. Let's talk about Rand. You know, Rand Paul is an interesting figure. I think Rand's biggest mistake that he's made is he's never been able to figure out if he is the descendant of his dad's anti-government, libertarian, pro-freedom, constitutionalist movement, or if he's just another good old boy Republican at the Bluegrass Country Club in Kentucky in the grill room watching Fox News. And I think that's the problem. He'll say a little bit libertarian, a little bit mainstream Republican. It bounces back and forth, and I think it's hit people the wrong way. They look at him like, well, if he can't make up his mind, I'm moving to somebody else. He probably, if he would have just been the Ron Paul and descendant, which he certainly is, blood-wise, he'd probably be doing better right now. He might even be number two in Iowa. He could be number one. And before we get to who is number one, Mr. Trump, let's talk about some of these other candidates. How about Jeb? Jeb looked pretty empowered last night. He's sort of like the kid in school. You find out the bully is sick for the day, and so you have your little run of freedom before the bully comes back and kicks your butt in the next debate. And he said he actually missed Donald Trump. I don't really believe that, but that's what he said. He had a pretty good night. It was Christie. But Jeb is, like I said, he's the wrong man for 2016. He was the right man for 2000, for 92, for the 1950s. He's sort of the group man in the gray flannel suit. Not the man for 2016. Americans are angry. Okay? Americans are angry. They want an ass kicker. They want somebody who's going to take charge and do something. They want Vince Lombardi. Okay? They don't want Mrs. Cranapple, the local librarian. He looks like a female librarian. I don't know what it is about the guy. Oh, hello, Raymond. What books are you taking out today? Oh, okay. Have these back in 2 weeks. Reminds me of a librarian. It also reminds me of my sister's third grade teacher, Mrs. Buescher, back in Illinois. He really does. He gave him a beehive hairdo, kind of a gray beehive. Anyway, moving on. Chris Christie, same old thing. Every time I look at Christie, I feel like I'm watching an episode of The Sopranos. He can't get away from that Jersey persona. Carly Fiorina, I wish she was in the with the adults. She was stuck on at the kids' table. Gilmore, Huckabee, and I don't know who else she was with. But it's too bad she wasn't allowed to sit at the adults' table. Who have I missed? Ben Carson. Looks like he smoked a couple joints before he went on stage. As he always does, he's a smart man. He's just too cool for school. Kasich. Kasich's interesting because what if Cruz got the nomination? You got this guy from Texas, not going to do too well north of the Mason-Dixon line. But what if he got Kasich as his running mate? The Ohio guy from Pennsylvania, work class, maybe get some of those swing states. Cruz could take Texas, might pull off Florida. An interesting theory. What if he had Cruz as the presidential candidate with Kasich as his vice presidential candidate? Now, he'd probably drive a lot of people nuts because, I don't know, he's kind of spastic. But that's a possibility. Ohio, Pennsylvania, you could take the swing states. You could take Michigan with Kasich, maybe. All right, let's talk about the leader of the pack, Mr. Trump, who was hosting his own veterans event last night while the debate was going on. Trump said he was going to raise a fortune. I wonder how much money he actually did raise last night. That is something to look up. If anybody knows how much Mr. Trump raised, give me a call, 602-753-1576 on the Ray Starman Show, 602-753-1576. You tell me how much money Mr. Trump raised last night. But the question is, will Trump be able to pull it off in Iowa? Now, he's way ahead in New Hampshire. Iowa, it's about a 2-point difference, but I think Cruz could take Iowa. I think we might have a shocker in Iowa. I think it could be Cruz. He's got the infrastructure. Rubio is second, or Trump maybe in third. Trump could be third in Iowa. He may not do as well as he thinks. Could be wrong, but he's going to take South Carolina. He'll take Nevada. But he might Trump might not do too well in Iowa. His little stunt last night may have hurt him. I'm not sure. Everybody has a different opinion on it. I think Cruz is going to win Iowa. Maybe. Probably. 80% chance. On the Democrat side, all bets are off. Hillary is starting to get beat up by this email controversy. She struts around like she doesn't even know what anybody's talking about. But I'll get to that in a second after a station break. But Sanders, I'd love to see. Say he's going to take New Hampshire. I'd love to see him take Iowa. I'd love to see him take everything. Just because it would throw the Democratic Party in turmoil. We'll talk about the coming turmoil in the Democrat Party. I come right back on the Ray Starman Show, and I get to talk about my favorite candidate right now, which is Hillary Clinton. We'll be right back on the Ray Starman Show.
Diver was a freedom rider. She didn't care if the whole world broke. Joan of Arc with the Lord to guide her. She was a sister who really could. Isadora was the first bra burner. And you're glad she showed up.
Oh, yeah.
And when the country was falling apart, Betsy Ross got it all sold up.
And then there's Maud.
And then there's Maud.
And then there's
Maud.
And then there's
Maud.
And then there's
Maud. That uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing.
Right on, Maud.
You could just change the words to that and just at the end put conniving, lying. Right on, Hillary. I love playing the Maud intro music when I talk about Hillary, because I call her the anti-Maud. She does resemble Maud with the pantsuits and the free-flowing stuff, the capes, sometimes a little colorful stuff, a lot of pantsuits, like I said, like Maud had. But where Maud was a woman's liberal who knew what the heck she was talking about, Hillary is a woman's liberal who doesn't know what she's talking about. Let's talk about the latest news, if you haven't heard tonight. Today, it's been all over the news. Even MSNBC was forced to cover it. I know. Chris Matthews looked like he was going to swallow a globe when he had to talk, give some bad news about Hillary. The latest revelations is that among the 1,600, count them, 1,600 classified emails that were flowing through Hillary's non-secure server, stored conveniently in a bathroom closet of a Rocky Mountain computer company owned by two hipsters from Boulder who didn't know a top secret document from a beer bong. There were, come as of tonight, 22 above top secret SEI, special access program documents that had information concerning human, that's human intelligence, that's espionage, that's human sources. Information. So this is the kind of thing it was. This stuff is so sensitive that a lot of people can't even see it that are in the State Department or even in the intelligence community. They don't have the need to know. She was probably sending some information about some guy in Russia that's working for the CIA or military intelligence that's an asset that, you know, we've maybe been running for 5 or 10 years. And it just flowed right through the non-secure server. 22. I mean, and there's going to be more. There's going to be more. Okay. I loved watching Admiral Kirby dodge that one. He looked like he had swallowed a canary today during his press conference. White as a ghost. His lips were all puckered. He didn't have that same El Curbo confidence that he had when he was selling us on the 5 o'clock Charlie Air campaign last year. Okay. The State Department, they thought they had their man there. They brought El Curbo over from the Pentagon, told him to change out of his Navy uniform, put on a suit, go get yourself some PX suits from Hart Schaffner Remarks, and lie conveniently for Mrs. Clinton, a.k.a. Ma Barker, which could be my new nickname for her. Well, she'll always be the anti-Maud, but I'm going to start calling her Ma Barker, who was a famous 1930s criminal that the FBI was after for a long time. You know, Hillary, her campaign released something today that's the equivalent of, well, it wasn't as classified as everybody thought. Not as serious as everybody thinks. Nothing to see here, folks. Keep moving on. Let's get to the real problems. And the question is, why would she do this? Why would she take the time to set up a non-secure server, knowing she's fully violating the rules, the national security rules, State Department law, I shouldn't say rules, laws, national security laws. What was the purpose of this? The purpose was that obviously there was information on there. I don't think she's committing espionage, but she was using that not secure server to hide stuff. And she probably gets some donations for the Clinton Foundation, bribes from foreign governments and foreign individuals to the Clinton Foundation. Supposed to be doing the good deeds. They're just going right into, you know, her bank account or Chelsea's or Bill's. That was the motivation. Now, she's not a spy. She's not doing that, but she did. She's committed so many national security crimes, committed so many felonies and misdemeanors. So, and what's going to happen now to her? Well, that's the question. I mean, there's several articles, you can check them out in the Washington Examiner. There's one on Drudge today. Daryl Issa, congressman from California, said that the FBI is ready to indict her and Huma. Let's talk about Huma Abedin. Huma Abedin has an interesting background. She was born in the United States, but lived in the Middle East a lot of her life. Her mother, parents are from India and Pakistan, I believe. Lived in Saudi Arabia, other parts of the Middle East. Started working for the government or for Hillary out of college, I believe. Been with her a while. She is an American-born citizen. But Huma's involved in this too because she's her main assistant. And one of the things that Madame Secretary was ordering is that her little group of minions delete the classifications on these top secret documents, classified documents. That's a felony. When you see a classified document or email, it will have the classification on the top and the bottom. So secret, the top of the page, secret on the bottom of the page, top secret, Oscar Mayer code name on the top of the page, top secret Oscar Mayer on the bottom of the page. I think Huma was involved in, I'm speculating on that, but she was involved. Daryl Issa says that the FBI is might go after her, involved in the deletion of these classifications. Hundreds, thousands of documents. That's why when Hillary's up there saying, I never sent or received anything marked classified, that's very clever, Hillary. I know your lawyers told you to say that, and your lawyer yourself. Because your little minions were deleting all the classifications. You are not a declassification authority, Hillary. You are not. That's usually the director of the CIA, the president of the United States, the director of the National Security Agency, the director of Army Intelligence, Navy Intelligence, that type of thing. So that's felony. There's so many felonies. I think Judge Napolitano and Rudolph Giuliani and Chris Christie said that this was months ago that there are 18 felonies and misdemeanors she's committed. There's probably more now. And the question is, will there be an indictment? Now, the FBI has got to be recommending that she's going to be indicted. Some other sources on Capitol Hill have told the Washington Examiner this week that this was pretty much a lock. What's going to happen, though? Is Loretta Lynch going to indict her? Is Obama going to get involved in this? And are they going to cover this up? They can't, okay? If she's indicted, if the FBI recommends that she's indicted and they don't do anything, the Justice Department doesn't do anything, the FBI director probably will resign another FBI agent. It'll be complete. It's a crisis any way you slice it, okay? And who's sitting on the on-deck circle right now swinging his bat? Waiting, looking at the dugout to see what's happening is Vice President Joe Biden. And if Biden actually, if Hillary is indicted and she goes down the drain, Biden comes in because they cannot let Sanders be the candidate. It'll be a blowout bigger than McGovern in 72. Biden comes in and he runs with Elizabeth Warren. That would be a formidable team to beat for the Republicans. Because Joe Biden, whether you agree with him or not, he's a likable guy. He's going to get all those Reagan Democrats that are ready to slip over to the Trump group right now. Elizabeth Warren, not as likable, but she's still likable as far as the liberals go. That will be big problems. There's going to be a lot that's going to be happening. And I don't know how Hillary Clinton's going to get out of this. I think that Obama is going to try to get her out of it, but I think there's going to be so much backlash. I just don't see how she could. And so think about it right now. We have the main Democrat presidential candidate is somebody that's being investigated by over 100 FBI agents at the time, who's probably going to be indicted. She's so out of her mind that if she is indicted before she goes to trial or whatever, she'll probably still be walking around with a microphone saying that there's nothing. She didn't do anything. I like the video from the summer and from this July where she's in a little prison sweater saying she didn't do anything. And it just shows you, you know, when I'm getting back to Maud, one of Maud's greatest lines was, God is going to get you. Well, Hillary Clinton's been getting away with a lot of nasty stuff for a long time. And the wheels of God grind exceedingly small. Translated means God is going to get you eventually. Or a force of good is going to get you. She's done a lot of bad stuff. And, you know, Joe Biden is one of these guys. If he steps in, he's a guy who's respected. People don't like his politics, but people like him personally. I think that the Republicans would have a tough race. But he would be running on Obama's record, which would help the Republicans. And we will see you next time on the Ray Starman Show. Talk about more current events, news, and military affairs. Have a good weekend. This is Ray Starman signing off for tonight. See you next time. Thanks for joining me.